Mark, what is your idea of romance? Walking in the outdoors? Margaritas on the beach? Or reading a book to each other?
Hiking.
Your ideal first date, would it be intimate dinner at a French bistro, getting drunk at a dive bar, or Netflix and chill?
Bistro.
Okay. How do you display your love? Flowers and a bottle of wine? Ball gag and a pair of handcuffs?
Wait, what?
A funny t-shirt and a hand-drawn picture.
Handcuffs? What is this?
Oh, I'm signing you up for a dating service.
Bob, I've been married for over 40 years. You know my wife.
Oh, I know, but I can get a free waffle iron.
Along with a lifetime supply of happiness, you'll also receive this. It's a new car!
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! Don is camping!
We are the wild and crazy guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans, and I'm wondering which Mark we got tonight. I was still a little shell-shocked from last episode.
Yes.
Mark, do we have nice Mark? I think I should fire that consultant.
Again, you asked for it.
I know, but, well, I didn't ask for it. I hired someone to tell me to ask for it.
You know, Bob, it's just a big act. You know, I felt like a little bit like I was like in the WWE, right? Like the good guy becomes a bad guy, but then he's a good guy. But he really was a bad guy.
Were you really thinking of body slamming me?
No, I'm not physically violent.
Okay, okay.
That I've never been. Okay. Verbally, yeah, you know, I'm one of six.
Wait, what about Hannibal? Was that all just a story?
Oh, the great Hannibal Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a story. Okay. I have never eaten anybody's brain.
Okay. But speaking of food.
I always want to speak of food.
What do you think? We kicked off our new segment. We have a new segment in our show.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, wasn't it? Talking to our guest. I mean, so we've introduced this latest episode of Silent Bite, singly focused just on food, a little 5-minute thing each week.
It's hard because we're bringing in some people that teach us some things, but I'd like to keep it as narrow as we can. So like Glenn didn't really get into the actual food. It was more of the mission.
Well, and plus, I think his podcast is interesting, right?
Yes.
And so for those foodies, which I have subscribed to his podcast now, you know, you can go out and listen to hear somebody talk about food. And he does a lot of research.
But what's really funny, and I think we could take some pride because he said it to us, we gave him the idea for the Latvian episode.
Right, exactly. We're influencers, Bob.
Yes, we are.
Just like those Estonian models.
I wish we had that kind of influence, Mark. But obviously, we had selected the most popular food item.
Yeah.
And because we both share a passion for bacon. That's what I just love. We've secretly voted and we both come out and pick the bacon pies.
I mean, we had a lot of things to choose from.
I know.
It still boggles my mind that we chose that one. Like movies are different, right? Movies, you know them, you see them, they're good, they're bad. We narrow down our choices.
Yeah, and it's almost more predictable that we'd pick similar movies than the food.
Right.
I think last year, I don't even think we had one thing in common on our lists of the foods.
I don't think so.
And this time, until we got to number one, we were kind of all over the board. And you know, as people who have listened to this show know, we tend to obsessed maybe a little about the food. So this is our secret way just to feed ourselves some of this food.
Yeah. Can you over obsess a food though?
I don't think you can, but we can bless it under this umbrella of it's educational. We're learning, Mark. We're novices and we want to reach out to people. We're more microwave enthusiasts than five-star chefs. So this will be culinary entertainment for our listeners and we'll grow from it. We'll develop.
We are going to get developed around it. Waste, probably blocking of our arteries.
Remember, calories don't count when you hear about them. That's what I've always heard.
That's true.
So from the kickoff, we've established some ideas to share, and we're looking for input. I want to hear from people that if they know origin stories of where this dish came from, if they know of Latvian bakeries or chefs that they would recommend. Maybe if someone is a Latvian listener and they grew up eating this, one of the things we're going to learn is how to properly pronounce the word pragi.
Although some people call the similar type of food speka, I found.
Look at that.
And there's also out on YouTube a masterclass of pragi cooking.
Mark, you've just given us one of our episodes. And I know that Glenn talked about how important it was to smoke the meat. And I know your son, one makes great beer. I guess the other one handles the meat part of your family.
I raised him kids right.
So I think we have a discussion and Eric's going to teach us about smoking the bacon, I think.
Great idea. I'm excited about it. We've teased about it for 2 years and talked about the food. Our live show, we actually brought in some food from other countries and we devoured that. So did our guests. And like, I think it's time for us to stand up, take the bacon by the horns and do something about it.
Take the pig by the nose.
Yeah, forever.
Well, before we get too distracted by these crescent-shaped lard buns, because we have to remember that's the other component of it.
Did you just call me a crescent-shaped lard bun?
I said lard buns, so maybe that's both of us. We're both
Do we need the bun stackers in here?
We got to be wearing them. We're by the end of this year, we're going to have two tight pairs of bun stackers on. But let's go back to that model-filled land.
Yes.
And carry our wives with us.
Yes.
So we can win their weight in beer, although it's not very much. Our wives are not very much.
That was very good, Bob. Thank you.
Yes, it's Estonia. We are back to Estonia. And for the trivia, Mark.
Yes.
We wanted to know what was the unusual fact about the name of their capital city, Tallinn. Do you know?
I did not.
So it's so funny when you think about this that it's lasted and it's stayed their name. But in 1219, there was a battle in Lindenes, Estonia. And it was between the forces of the invading Kingdom of Denmark and the Estonians. During the war, the Danes built a castle, and it was named Castrum Danorum. The Estonians started to call it Tane Linna, which later was shortened to Tallinn. So the name of the capital city of Estonia, named after the invading Danes who built the castle, it translates to mean Danish castle.
Oh my gosh.
So their capital city is named after the Danes who battled with them and built the castle there.
That's a great trivia question.
It is. And if you know that, we can't give you the castle. We could have some Danes invade your house. I could maybe locate though. And we will send you a sticker if you knew that.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
So, Bob, tonight, I think you told all our listeners that we're going to go to Luxembourg this episode. And tonight we're going to be reviewing a movie called Paper Souls that came out in 2013, or as they would say in Luxembourg, La Zeme de Papier, which is Paper Souls. It was released, fun fact, on Christmas Day.
Oh, it was.
In 2013.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, your family and my family have gone out to see a big movie on Christmas. This was one of the big movies that came out in 2013 in Luxembourg, France, and a few other countries.
So I guess that really qualifies it as a Christmas movie when it's released on Christmas Day.
I mean, I think it's starting off on the right foot. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about, but I would say as a precursor or warm-up, a review of this movie back then said it was sort of like a Christmas Carol.
Oh, well, there is an element like the Christmas Carol, yes.
I thought that was interesting, too. So let's talk about the actors and actresses in there. The first one I would cover was Stefan Guillaume. Stéphane Guillon is a French actor, comedian, and radio and television columnist. And in fact, he was a little controversial when he was a reporter on TV in French public radio.
That reminds you of David Letterman. He was a weatherman, but he was really funny, and you know what I mean? He would get in trouble.
And then Stéphane plays Paul, but his career started when he was expelled from high school and decided to study acting. In order to learn English, though, he actually moved to Los Angeles for a year and worked as a waiter in a French restaurant.
Oh, that is funny.
I would never think about, you know, I'm 17 years old, 18 years old. I'm just going to go another country to learn the language.
Learn the language so I could be an actor.
He started as a stand-up comedian and won several awards during comedy festivals, which then led to television and radio appearances, then a film career. I mean, he's had a lot of success in radio, theater, stage, film, and as a writer.
You know, he's a good actor because I would tell you, he doesn't strike me as someone who got expelled from school.
Oh, yeah.
Controversial.
Yeah.
Comedian. He's very straight-laced in this role.
Absolutely. The love interest in this movie is played by Julie Gaia. Julie Gaia is a French actress and film producer, but she's also known for being the wife of the former president of France.
Oh my God.
François Hollande. They had an affair, which was very detailed in the press, and they ended up getting married.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So Jolie studied art history and psychology in college. So she went to acting school. She went to circus school and also is an operatic singer.
Oh my God. We got two interesting controversies on both of them.
I know. She made her acting debut on television and has also performed as a singer. She actually formed her own production company and directed multiple documentaries. Her most recent new thing to do was being appointed the supervisory board of the French Professional Rugby Union Club. So I sing, I dance, I perform tricks, and I'm the head of the rugby.
And she's like the female Ted Lasso.
Well, guess when you're married to the former president of France?
Probably a lot of opportunities come your way.
And I'll keep you from looking it up on Wikipedia. They're still married. So they had this affair because he was president, I think, in 2012, something like that. And so when he was president, they had an affair, but then they got married. And I think they have two or three kids.
Wow.
Started off controversial. And then so she plays Emma. And then the last one, Nathan, is played by Jonathan Zaki. And Jonathan is a Belgian actor, film director, and screenwriter. He began his career in advertising before deciding that he was going to be an actor. He considered working as a director before turning to acting. He had some small roles in film and television. The public discovered him in a role in the movie The Return of the Living Dead in 2004. And he even appeared in some Hollywood movies. He was in the movie Robin Hood with Russell Crowe. And then in the feature film Downton Abbey, The New Era in 2022. He's pretty accomplished. But let's talk about this movie, Paper Soul. So the movie starts off at a funeral, and the woman gets up to give a little bit of a eulogy for her husband. And she starts talking, has a little bit of humor in it, calls the person out for being kind of a son of a bitch and nobody really liked you. And then, you know, as she's going through her eulogy, there's this guy off on the side who's sort of mouthing the same word she is. And it ends with like a New Orleans jazz band comes in and plays music, right?
Which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, in the end of it was like trying to have a happy ending to maybe this person who's died, who's a little bit of a miserable person, yes. Right? And so you quickly learn that Paul is a writer who's been down on his luck a little bit. His wife has died. And so for his job, he's been writing eulogies.
Which was such a unique concept, wasn't it?
You know, I thought for a minute, I got a little angry with you, Bob. I thought like, did Bob set me up? But because my dad's a funeral director.
Oh.
I mean, I've been to. I've been to, I don't know how many funerals in my life across multiple cultures, multiple religions. So I've heard a lot of eulogies and I wondered myself, wow, for some of those really good, did somebody write those? I honestly don't know if they did, but like I heard some really heartfelt, good humor. I literally had to pause and think about, I wonder if that was the case.
Well, and I never would have thought that before, that someone would do that. But I'm like, wow, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe if like a professional, like if it's somebody famous, you know. I just thought it was right off the bat, I thought, well, this is a very interesting role that this person is playing. So right. Paul is, again, we learned that his wife has died and he was a famous writer.
Yeah.
And he seems like a really nice guy. And we also meet there's a guy named Victor, who's this older sort of off the top pack rat guy who's constantly wanting to fix him up with girls he meets, trying to get Paul back into dating
Victor.
Thing.
Didn't you love Victor? Victor was great. And wasn't Victor like totally living vicariously through Paul?
Totally. Would want all the details of his dates. But he's also searching for something too, right? You get to learn that he is trying to put together some missing pieces in his life. But I love when he tells Paul early on in the movie, you know, you can't spend your whole life waiting for a dead woman, which is really talking about his wife who's passed away. And so I think he is a good friend, a tough friend.
Yeah, he's tough on
Paul. Like, you know, you have to move on. So after this initial opening scene, Paul meets a woman named Emma. Emma comes to him and says, you know, my aunt was the person who you wrote that eulogy for, and she referred me to you. And he's like, okay, fine. Yeah, I can do the work. Like, start giving me facts about the person who's been dead. And when is the funeral? She's like, well, I'm not going to eulogize him at a funeral. It's for my son.
Yeah.
My husband died over a year ago. He was a reporter. He got killed in action. My son's birthday's coming up, and I really want to be able to say something nice about him for my son. So I need you to sort of organize all my emotions into a eulogy. So they start meeting on a regular basis, talking about Nathan, or her giving him facts about Nathan's life. And you can see he's starting to make a connection with her. Yes. And of course, Victor was like, oh, Paul, okay, here's the setup. You do this eulogy, you write it for her, and then you sleep with her, right? He starts to put together some notes. He's all done. He gives it to Emma, and Emma's like, well, I can't give it to my son. I need you to give it to him. And he's like, well, no, I don't do that.
Is way bigger than I anticipated.
This is like, I do eulogies and, you know, you give them, I write them. But he agrees to it because, you know, he obviously likes Emma and is interested in Emma. So she says to her little son, this is one of Dad's friend. He wants to talk to you. I'm going to go out. And so she leaves. Paul is there with her son. And as soon as he starts talking about, like, he's going to start telling about it, the boy shuts down.
Yeah.
Wants nothing to do with it. Boy falls asleep. He falls asleep. Emma comes home and's like, well, how did that go? He goes, I didn't go really, really well.
And it's incredibly awkward.
Yeah, incredibly awkward. Right? He just met Emma. And now he's going to talk to this little boy about his dad. She's like, okay, fine. All right. That didn't work. Come back tomorrow. It comes back tomorrow. That didn't work. And as he's leaving, the second attempt at trying to tell the little boy about his dad, it turns out it's the little boy's birthday. And so Emma's like, well, why don't you come to the birthday? And the little boy's looking at him. He's like, okay, I'll come to the birthday. He comes back and he tells Victor. And Victor's like, oh, this is perfect. You write the eulogy. You talk to the little boy. You get invited to the birthday. Oh, you're in, right? Like, he just wants.
No matter what happens, Victor finds a way for him to end up with her.
Yeah, exactly. But before you go to this party, you're going to have to bring a present. So he goes and he gets this little present. Victor's brother's name was Pavel. And really what we learn throughout the movie is Pavel is Victor's younger brother. Pavel and Victor were in the concentration camps. And we know that Pavel didn't survive. But he gives to Paul, to give to the little boy, a little monkey on a bicycle, I think with a little bell that you wind up. And he tells Paul to tell the little boy, tell him it's a magical toy. At first, Paul refused to take it, but he's like, you know, Pavel would love to know that this toy is going to this little boy. So they go to the birthday party. And at the birthday party, Paul, he's really trying to make an impression with the little boy. And he even tries to tell funny jokes to all the kids.
He's terrible.
You know, they're all just, horrible. But he's obviously making a connection. And he tells the little boy, this is a special magical present. And if you wind this toy up, you can get 3 wishes. And so he tells Adam, his little boy's name, wind this up and you can get 3 wishes. So he does. And it goes off and nothing happens. And Paul says, well, Adam, like, what did you wish for? He goes, well, I wish for snow. And he goes, well, not all wishes come true right away. And so, but he doesn't ask him his other wishes. And so Paul and him like are getting along really well. He also starts seeing Emma on a regular basis. They're starting to sort of make a connection. In fact, after one of the babysitting adventures with Paul and Adam, those two sort of have a very romantic moment in the kitchen, a very romantic moment on the floor of the kitchen, and they're really starting to make a connection. And so Paul leaves her, goes home, and in the middle of the night, there's a knock on his door. And he opens up the door, and it turns out to be Nathan,
yeah.
Adam's dad, Emma's husband, and he's sort of standing there in front of Paul, not knowing why he's there.
Yeah.
Doesn't remember his name, doesn't know why he's at this door. And so Paul runs, knocks on Victor's door. Victor's like, why are you waking me up? It's the only night I've slept. And he's like, look out there. He's, I'm seeing things. I'm seeing Nathan. And he opens the door. He goes, yep, that's Nathan. He's there. And so now we have a situation where Nathan is back.
What's odd about this is there's a half hour at least has gone in the movie. And it takes this like wild turn that I never saw coming.
I didn't see it either coming, but then I thought, oh my God, Nathan's really alive.
Yes, that was right? My impression too. He survived.
Yeah. He survived. But then I'm like, why the hell is he at that house, right? Like, yeah, why would he show up at Paul's house? He's not sure what to do. And so he tells Nathan, you just stay here, stay with Victor. I'll be right back. You know, earlier in the movie, Emma had told him that, hey, if you want to learn more about Nathan's life, talk to his driver when he was at the war front, and he'll tell you maybe some things about him that I don't know. So he calls up this guy, says he has to meet with him immediately, and he tells this guy, hey, Nathan's alive. And the guy's like, yeah, there's no way Nathan's alive. He's like, no, he is. And you don't see this on film, but he says, here's a picture of what Nathan's body looked like after the explosion happened. And he's like, well, I'm telling you, he's alive. You know, the taxi driver gets spooked out. The guide gets spooked out. And so Paul goes back to his house and Nathan's like, what's going on? Who am I? And he goes, oh, well, we were just buddies. We were really good friends. He goes, well, tell me, like, do I have a wife? Do I have a child? No. You don't have a wife or child, you know, because from Paul's perspective, he's starting to sort of come out of his mourning for his wife, is really interested in Emma. He's got this person who should be dead, who he's been writing about, sitting in his living room. So I don't know if he's protecting himself. He's protecting Emma, Adam. I'm not sure who he's trying to protect, but he sort of denies the existence of everybody and denies the existence of Nathan, even though he knows who he is. So he's out and he goes to see Emma and he really wants to tell Emma about this, but then decides not to. He comes back to the apartment and Nathan has now found this box full of notes and pictures of him.
Of himself.
And he's like, well, wait a minute, like you're lying to me. Who am I? And so then he has to confess that he does know who he is, that he does have a wife and he does have a child. They sneak out one night and they look at Adam fencing in class. The wife calls Paul and says, Adam said he just saw you and Nathan at the fencing class. And he's like, what do you mean? Of course not. That could never happen. And then Paul comes back and tells Nathan that they were kind of found out. So Nathan obviously wants to go and meet his wife. And they agree to sort of look across the street while she's working in her bookstore. And Nathan wants to go talk to her. Paul says, no, don't do it. They get into a fist fight. And so sure enough, out comes Emma and asks Nathan, like, where have you been? You're dead. And he goes, I was almost dead, but not quite. I chuckled at that line so long. So now you have Emma, who now knows that her husband appears to be back. They have to break this to Adam. And so they go and they go back to their apartment. So Nathan is there with Emma, with Adam, with Paul. And Nathan has no memory. No memory of her. No memory of the little boy. Yeah. She's welcomes him back. There's a scene where Nathan is going to stay with her and with Adam, and Paul is going to leave. And Emma's upset. Like, Emma was really starting to make a connection with Paul. This stranger who looks like her husband is now in her house.
Were you surprised that she made him sleep on the couch?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, like I was like, only because I was trying to think if that really happened, she would be overwhelmed. She'd be like, want him to stay in the bed. But
you know, from the beginning, she sensed something's wrong, right? And it's not really Nathan.
Yeah.
Now, there's sort of this love triangle, if you will, between Nathan, Paul, and Emma. And you're trying to figure out, and I think at this part of the movie, I was like, I don't know what's going on. Who is Nathan? Is he a ghost? But he's physically there. But then as the movie evolves, what we really get to learn is Nathan has come back, not necessarily to help Emma and Adam reconcile things, but really Nathan has come back because he starts having these memories. He's dancing with Emma the one night and he goes, oh, you must have had it removed. She's like, had what removed? You know, the scar on your neck. And she gets really upset with him and leaves. And even then I'm like, wait, what just happened? Why is she mad? Well, it turns out that Paul's wife had a scar on her neck, right? Yep. And then he remembers this mad lovemaking they did on the floor, but it was really Paul who had that. And so really what we come to realize is that Nathan is indeed a ghost, but he's carrying the memories of Paul's life, not of his life as Nathan. And they kind of become friends and they sort of start building a bond between them, but they sort of start realizing also that this can't work out, right? Nathan starts realizing that he has to say goodbye. Paul realizes he's going to have to let go. And so they sort of start going through all these different stories. Nathan shares with Paul about how nice it was, Nathan being as his wife's memory, all the things they did together, which sort of softens his heart. Paul tells Nathan, you're going to have to say goodbye to Emma. You're going to have to say goodbye to your son. There's one cute sort of side story, you know, going back to Victor. So again, we learned that Victor is really trying to find some types of memories from Pavel. And he talks about during the Warsaw ghettos, the Jewish people would, and I looked this up and it's true, they used to bury boxes with memories in it and hoping that at some point in time people would come back and find them. So he's really trying to find with all his papers that he has strewn about his apartment, memories of Pavel. Well, Adam draws Paul a picture, and during Victor's very manic stages, Paul takes that picture, he quiets down Victor and then puts it in his hand, and Victor wakes up and says, oh, well, Paul found this picture. So he found his connection back to Pavel. But back to Nathan and to Paul and to Emma, Paul finally is able to let go his wife's memory. Nathan says goodbye to his wife. The little boy is as sweet as can be. And he's like,
that was very touching. I you know what I mean? When he was saying goodbye to him.
Yeah. He's like, I'm saying goodbye forever now, aren't I? And Nathan says, yes. And so at the closing of it, right, there's sort of this, you know, it starts to snow because Adam had wished for snow. And Paul goes back to see Emma and to see Adam. Not sure really if Emma's going to welcome him back into their lives, which they do. Mm-hmm. The movie ends. And it's really a very creative movie about letting go and reconciling your feelings after loved ones die. There's certainly a, you know, really to talk about the Christmas element. You know, Christmas is sort of there. And it's like, you know, they're decorating for Christmas, but it's not like in your face
part of the movie. No, it is in the background.
It is definitely in the background. Yes. But it's a very tender, extremely well acted.
Yes.
Extremely well acted.
And like I said, there was enough of a story without Nathan coming back.
Yeah.
I was involved in that. Then Nathan comes back and it completely blindsides you. And, you know, this is a whole different direction. And you also realize Adam, he also wished for his dad to come back.
And let me ask you this. So thank you for bringing that up because it's important, right? What do you think the third wish was?
Because the monkey moves again. There is a third wish. Is it for them to get together? All to be together?
Yes. Along those lines, I was thinking, like, I think he was wishing his mother would be happy.
Oh, I bet you're right.
Snow, dad comes back. But the third one is that his mom would be happy.
Yeah, and every time there's a wish, the bike moves forward.
That's what I thought maybe the third wish was.
And you just said that about Christmas. Is it festive?
Yeah, I think so. There's a backdrop of Christmas there of wintertime. They are decorating a tree. Yeah, I would call it festive.
Let me ask you this. Is it festive because of Christmas, or is it festive because of the subject matter?
Well, I think it's festive because of the Christmas spirit and the holiday season. The subject matter mean like a ghost kind of
thing? Well, I guess what I mean is that I wouldn't say it's festive because there's scenes of gifts opening and decorations. To me, the storyline and the feelings and the emotions they're grappling with, that's what makes it festive that's to me, fair. And how it resolves itself all. And it resolves itself in a way that, obviously, Nathan is dead. He's not happy, but I think everybody has a resolution.
Right.
And it seems like it's a positive ending.
It is a positive. I mean, because Victor gets his, I think that's right.
I do think it's festive. I think it's very festive. But to me, what I got from the festivity was the emotional part and not necessarily the trimmings.
The trimmings of it, yeah. How'd you feel watching it?
One, I found it very engaging.
Yes.
I thought it was very creative. From the outset, I'm like, this guy writes eulogies and then he's like a famous writer and you can tell he's lonely. And it didn't seem to me like anything was forced or let's throw a wrinkle of a ghost in here to just push the storyline. It all seemed to fit together. And so I was really engaged. I wanted to know how it was going to end.
Yeah, me too. I thought the movie was well done.
Yeah. So future?
Oh, I would watch it again. Yeah. Absolutely. And recommend it.
Yes.
I think I would tell anybody to watch this movie. And again, good movie to watch. It's kind of a love story. Well, it is a love story.
It
not
is.
Kind of.
It is.
I mean, you have multiple loves there, right? You have the love of Adam by his mom, Paul, who becomes in love with Adam. You have Emma and Paul, Victor's love for Pavel. In the end, Paul, while he's been mourning his wife for 5 years, he's a good person, right?
He is.
How about you? Would you watch it again?
I would. And it's one of those rare Christmas films, although we've seen a few of them. You could watch this any time of year. It's a really good movie. It still made me kind of sad. Remember Adam, like he's losing his memories of his dad. He was having a hard time remembering him. And I thought, you know, we know when kids experience that. And he felt the loss, but he also was starting to forget his dad. And I thought that was so sad.
No, that is very sad. But anyway, I think well done. But would you like to learn how to say Merry Christmas in Luxembourgish?
I just love saying Luxembourgish.
I didn't even know that was a real name.
Yes.
I actually was going to call you out on it. Say, is that really too much?
But well, how do you say it?
You say, shy, crush de page, crush de page. Luxembourgish is the main language in Luxembourg, followed by Portuguese, French, and English. Shy, crush de eggy literally means beautiful Christmas days, or more literally, nice Christmas days in English. Shy is Germanic in origin and means nice or beautiful. Kreshte Ege is the pull of Kreshte Dag, meaning Christmas Day, and is derived from the ancient Greek word Christos, which refers to Jesus as Christmas, and means anointed. Kreshte Dege, you had to write that one more time, refers to Christmas holidays or the days around Christmas. Shy Kreshte Ege is the common greeting used in Luxembourg during the Christmas season.
I love when we find the literal translations, but they kind of mean something a little bit different.
So some customs in Luxembourg. Most families in Luxembourg report that they have large meals when they were small, right? So they things like stuffed turkey or roast. But now they actually are moving away from those large meals and going more towards a fondue. Believe that? It started with meat fondue in the 1980s. Fondue Bourguignon was first, which is the fondue where small pieces of various meats are cooked in a hot oil bath. The meat can be then dipped in various sauces. Next came raclette, which is similar. It's kind of a similar communal meal like fondue, but is centered around the melted cheese. The raclette cheese round is heated either in front of a fire or in a special grill, then scraped onto the diner's plates over various meats like chicken, beef, bacon, or potatoes.
That's different. You're not dipping it in. They pour it onto your plate.
Right.
Okay.
Soon fondue Chinese style became more widespread where you just use hot broth to cook instead of oil.
I was wondering why it was Chinese style. Hot broth.
This is similar to an Asian-inspired hot pot that uses a wine based broth instead of oil or cheese. In Chinese style, raw meat and blanched vegetables are cooked in simmering broth, then dipped in a variety of sauces. Then the meat is marinated with herbs and a few spices. I guess this method is considered least dangerous,
yeah,
and the house won't smell like oil for the next 2 weeks.
Which I remember was a complaint. Some people like the fondue, some don't because their house smells like fondue. You know, what's your feeling on fondue? Do you like fondue?
I like when there's chocolate fondue and you're dipping a fruit into it. But even that, I would say it's not the most desired thing. How about you?
I remember there was a time, like it was in the 80s or something, fondue got really popular. Yeah. And there was a lot of fondue restaurants in the suburbs and the city. Yeah. And every time I've gone, and then we also went to a fondue place when we were in Montreal, you barely get anything to eat. I am not enthused about fondue at all.
The next is just sort of a dark side of Christmas.
Oh, dark mark?
Dark mark, yeah. The Hausker, or Hausker, is a dark, gloomy sidekick who accompanies Santa Claus on St. Nicholas Day in Luxembourg. He is St. Nicholas's bad-tempered companion, Mark, and usually the one to deal with naughty children. The character seems to have developed out of a variety of German folklore characters adapted to serve as a counterpoint to St. Nick. The tradition is his job is to scare children and punish them if they don't behave. He's usually depicted with a darkened face and long black hairs, a brown or black coat, and dark clothes. He also carries a bag full of twigs. His role is to punish the children if they're not good. To do this, he distributes the sticks that have been dipped in pepper, salt, and vinegar. He also uses the bag to carry away misbehaving children.
So wait, are they supposed to lick those sticks or what?
Yeah, that's what they get. Yeah. I guess they have to suck them. Because I'm thinking, does he hit them? Because you're going to end up in jail, Hausker. I think it's just interesting in Europe how they have these.
Yeah, there's always a counterpoint to Santa.
Like St. Nicholas just gave you a lump of coal.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Here you get beaten with a stick.
That has salt and pepper on
it. Or carried away.
Yeah, right. Here's some more food. Boxermännchen is also called Kuschelmännchen. Is a traditional Luxembourgish pastry made from milk bread or brioche dough. Yeah, that's going to get good now. Baked in the shape of a man during late November, early December, they are a staple in Luxembourg's bakeries and Christmas markets. The word Boxermännchen roughly translates to little man made of dough, which is amazing because Boxermännchen was my nickname as a little kid.
That's what I was going to say. That's what Mary Ellen calls me.
Come here, my little Boxermännchen. I have to listen out for that. Some are adorned with raisins or chocolate chips for eyes pressed into the dough, sugar icing, or even a little accessories like paper hats or sticks. I wonder if they're pepper sticks, though, or salted sticks. They are soft, fluffy, slightly sweet, and golden brown on the outside. They're almost sold exclusively during Christmas season when the children in Luxembourg place their shoes out on the evening of December 5th or St. Nicholas Day. So Boxermännchen sounds good. So the last thing is more food. The Luxlot eggnog is a cherished tradition in Luxembourg. And so Lux actually is a county in Luxembourg.
Okay.
And Lot means milk in French. So Luxlot is sort of the milk that's made in the Lux region. But it's a tradition in Luxembourg. It starts in the Christmas season. This gets interesting as to why it came about. It's a limited edition specialty that was only found on shelves during the holiday season. It is said to be originated during World War II. The American soldiers couldn't get eggnog at Christmas, so they approached this Luxlot dairy. They provided the recipe and asked them to duplicate sort of this beverage, make their own eggnog. They sort of made their own spin on this, but it was delivered directly from the farmers. And as the decades have passed, the recipes today is a little bit different than the American version. This drink is made of sweetened milk, cream, vanilla, nutmeg, brandy, cognac, or rum. And there's also some non-alcoholic versions. So it's just sort of started because the World War II vets wanted to have their eggnog, and now they have become world famous for their Luxlot eggnog that's only served in Luxembourg.
Well, I think this is the first foreign tradition we've ever covered that came from an American.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Now I really want to try some.
Should we talk about the music?
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that? least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Do they have Luxembourgish music?
They absolutely do. So let's listen to the song. Didn't you want to start saying, we will rock you? So that is the Lao Wu Kishkan remake. And it actually means nice little one. It's a traditional children's Christmas song that has been remade by some Luxembourg musicians. It was released in 2024 and features several well-known artists like Johnny Chicago, Khalid Oki, Lede Milestone.
Johnny Chicago?
You know him, right?
No.
No, either do I. But he was born and raised in Luxembourg and is the alter ego of producer, composer, songwriter, and vocalist Jonathan Reichling. I guess Johnny Chicago sounds better than Johnny Reichling, yeah. But he's known for his dance music and live shows. And there's sort of this recognized classical Johnny Chicago sound, which is like electrical dance music with synthesizers.
I think we heard it at the beginning Yeah.
Throbbing beats.
Yeah.
He recruited Khalid Oki to join him on this holiday song, which I think we ran into him someplace else in our podcast because he's from Lagos, Nigeria, and he moved to Luxembourg when he was 11. But I swear I know that name. But he met Johnny Chicago and they put this single together. But he's had a couple number one hits in Luxembourg as well as France, Germany, and Italy. Also, Lede Milestone is a popular rap artist from Luxembourg. And so this is like a traditional Christmas music. But I got to tell you about what the words mean, Bob.
Oh, uh-oh. Are they not good?
Well, the second stanza is, Dear St. Nicholas, good St. Nicholas, okay. Bring us some things beautiful and good. Okay. A horse for me and a whip, just like the ones you have in heaven, with candies and a little bag, apples, pears, hazelnuts. But please, good Santa Claus, don't forget my mom. What? I'll bring a horse and a whip?
Wasn't that on your Christmas list?
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a sweet thing, but I'm like, I was just curious, like, oh, that's kind of a neat, like, what's the words? So.
I love it. Now I know what to get you next year.
A whip.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Let's talk about more about our food.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Bobby, we interviewed the really bright person last time, but we thought we needed to sort of continue this. And given the fact that we've committed ourselves to researching and making this tasty dish, Glenn, we love you. He's obviously very knowledgeable and clearly understood the importance of food and our family rituals. But it gave us the thought that perhaps we need to go to a higher power. So we went to artificial intelligence.
Oh.
or as our Secretary of Education called it, A1. We went to ChatGPT and Grok. We used the same prompts for both. And the first thing we learned was how to pronounce this name. And it's called pierogi. In addition, we discovered that this is the plural form, which refers to multiples of these small bacon pies. I mean, why?
Well, that means
one?
We're going to eat pierogi.
A single one is called pirogs. Pierogi is multiple. Pirogs is one. Another tasty morsel provided by AI is that these pastries are also called paradzini, spika, which I said earlier, or spika pierogi, and they can be made in sweet and savory variations. The next thing we did, though, was we learned that pierogies are made with yeast dough. Given how little you and I know about dough, other than spending it, this was a cryptic clue. What is yeast dough, and how is it different than dodo? In addition, our AI friend also presented us with a new wrinkle, smoked bacon. Our investigation was broadening. This was not your common store-bought bacon. And where do we find this? A butcher shop? A delicatessen? Do we need to smoke it ourselves? Do we need to smoke before we eat it? So many questions. Or do we smoke while we eat it? And if we're smoking, what are we smoking?
What are we smoking?
Culturally, AI tells us the same name and concept of pierogi evolved from other regional food staples found in the Baltics and Eastern Europe. So next episode, we're going to dive just a little bit deeper.
So we need to find out, so what the heck is yeast dough? Where does smoked bacon come from? And then also, what are the other influences from the Baltic states? Interesting.
Yeah. Now, maybe it's the pigs that are smoking.
So do we have to force a pig to smoke?
Stay tuned. Should we talk about trivia?
Yes.
It's trivia.
So when you consider that the entire population of Luxembourg is about the size of the Dallas metro area, you might wonder how anything interesting could happen in such a small country.
That's crazy. I did not know it was that small.
At first, we thought maybe we should skip the trivia and give all the residents a free sticker.
That might be easier.
But there's too much interesting things here that we have to talk about. We thought about quizzing you on the strange dichotomy how little Luxembourg has a national debt of over $3 trillion, or more than $3 million per resident.
Are you kidding?
But it also has the highest GDP of any country and is the richest region per capita.
I don't get that at all.
You know,
no one's paying taxes.
We considered asking about how Luxembourg has a $227 million fund used to entice companies to mine asteroids. They're just ahead of their games.
Okay.
Or we thought we might challenge you on Luxembourg's version of Superman called Super Hayim. He's modeled on the stereotypical Luxembourger that has a big belly, draws his power from eating cheese and drinking beer, and who flies around with his hands in his pocket.
I think that's me. I'm Super Humper, whatever.
Super Humper. Finally, we thought maybe to test you on how Luxembourg's gold medal win in the 1952 Olympics was so unexpected that the band didn't have music for their national anthem. So they just made up a song. But no, we decided we wanted to know about a graveyard in Luxembourg where 5,074 American soldiers are buried. There's a famous U.S. military officer buried here. Who is he? We may not have enough for the whole country, but if you do win, you can choose to donate your festive foreign film sticker to the whole Luxembourg army, which is right now about 790 soldiers.
Oh my God.
We might have Bob's little village of Trout Valley challenge them to a battle. For a sticker, of course.
Yeah, that might be somebody we can take on.
You know, you might be. I mean, you get those golf carts all lined up with your music and your lights. I think it could be.
Well, especially if we're facing a bunch of big-bellied, beer-drinking, cheese-eating Luxembourgers.
Who run around with their hands in their pockets.
Yeah.
You know, Bob, because the movie tonight talked a little bit about death and eulogies and stuff like that, I've all lost somebody, right? And we've all had to face the first birthday party, the first Christmas, the first, so many firsts after someone dies. And so I found this quote. There's no one whose name was attached to it, but I thought it is something that I would think I have felt about the family members, what I've said to other people. But it's Christmas is a time for joy, and your memory brings a joy to my heart. So it's a way to remember someone and think about the Christmas and that they've maybe had with them in the past.
That's good. Like Nathan.
Like Nathan, the goofiest ghost ever. Hey, our next episode, guess where we're going to? Nope, you're wrong. We're going to a place that our current U.S. president is really excited about.
Canada.
Nope, we've already been there.
Okay.
We're going to Greenland.
Whoa, Greenland.
We are heading to the Arctic to find out what the fuss is all about. We're going to review a film from 2019 called Gunpowder and Love. It's not currently streaming on any of the services at the time, but you can find it for rent from various international sources. So, Gunpowder and Love.
That sounds like what might be going on between us and them right now.
Kind of. Anyway, it's been fun tonight, Bob. Season 3 is off and running. Don't get left behind, everybody. It's not a sprint, but a long jog to the holiday season. Put on your earbuds and join us for the whole new truck this year. We know it may be a little bit of a struggle at first. You're out of Christmas shape. You haven't been exercising your jolly, but start now. You'll feel better by December, and you'll be glad you did.
That's perfect.
Yes. So Have a good night, everyone. We'll see you in Greenland. Here we come.
Actually, we're done.
It's over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.